You're listening to the Market Leaders Podcast, brought to you by Pipeline Plus. Professional service firms use Pipeline Plus to capture more business from their most important clients, prospects, and referral sources. Pipeline Plus delivers the simplest interface in the marketplace and in-app suggestions on exactly which actions to take to close the next deal. It's used as a standalone app, in conjunction with business development coaching, or as a CRM companion for more effective sales pipeline management. To learn more or schedule a demo, visit pipelineplus.com. Hello and welcome back to the Market Leaders Podcast. I'm David Ackert, and today our guest is Vivian Coco, who is the Marketing and Client Relations Director at Lix Attorneys. Vivian, great to have you with us.
Hi, David. It's great to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
I'm excited to talk to you today about satisfying DEI requirements across cultures. Your firm has a vast reach across the globe. And so I know that this is something that you have navigated and found some interesting solutions to and have a lot of insights to share in terms of how various cultures relate to DEI, what their requirements are, and ultimately how your firm has been able to satisfy those requirements. But before we dive into all that, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background.
I'm the director of marketing here at Lix Attorneys. It's a Brazilian law firm focused on intellectual property litigation. And we have five offices, some of them here in Brazil, one in Japan, and some desks in Europe. I've been working in the legal market for more than 15 years. I have a master's degree in business management focused on organizational behavior. My research was on DEI practices of the biggest Brazilian law firms. I'm also a guest lecturer in undergraduate and graduate courses here in Brazil, podcasts as well, to talk about DEI in organizations.
Well, let's segue right into that. So given your firm's international reach, tell us about some of the challenges you encounter satisfying DEI requirements in various regions.
Okay, so we have the Western market, like US, Europe, those markets are more advanced and they already expect law firms to address a wide range of DEI issues, incorporating inclusivity into their policies, practices, culture in general. Being in this advanced stage, those markets are already working with tracking and analysis of different data related to DEI. However, companies and law firms across Asia appears to be on a different route when compared to the Western. Here we have like racial and ethnic tensions being at the forefront of the DEI initiatives, but this is not the case in Asia. A survey conducted a couple of years ago by WTR showed that something around 55% of law firms worldwide reported having a formal DEI policy. This number decreased to less than 40% in Asia. Less than 30% of the Asian law firms reported that clients or potential clients had asked them about DEI policies. Asia Business Law Journal published, I think, last month or a couple of months ago, an article that quotes different general counsels and managing partners of Asian companies and law firms. And they all have the same backgrounds that DEI is not a topic to be considered in the hiring process of services providers, including law firms. When we talk about China, for example, the legal industry there currently lacks explicit diversity requirements, for example. It's worth noting that Chinese market often values a high-status, male-centric legal team. They have some DEI initiatives going on in global firms that have offices in there, but local firms, they are still not very well, they don't have this demand on their minds. And Japanese firms, on the other hand, they do have some diversity and inclusion requirements, especially related to women, but they are by far not advanced as Western companies and law firms.
When you're putting together a legal team for a Chinese client, The diversity has less to do with racial background or gender. It's more making sure that there's a high status male centric legal team, and that the clients are looking at those kinds of optics in terms of feeling like they have a team that will represent them effectively.
Yeah, they feel more comfortable when having male centric team. Of course, it's not like they would not accept or they don't want to have female partners, lawyers work for them. It's not that case, but they do have this hierarchy where male partners are still seen as more reliable or mature. But yes, they have this difference in culture when we talk about DEI.
Talk to us about how this plays out in Brazil.
Well, in Brazil, we have an increasing number of female partners reaching leadership positions inside law firms. Female representatives here, this was an issue. If we talk about a decade ago or something like that, we talked about a lot about having female partners. But now I believe this is not our biggest challenge anymore. What I believe it's our biggest challenge is the underrepresentation of non-white professionals. During my research for the master degree, I realized that this is not a problem that comes from inside law firms. This problem comes from outside the law firms, from our society in general.
So why do you feel that Brazil is struggling from a cultural background perspective, even though there seems to have been a lot of progress when it comes to gender diversity?
First, we have the combination of historical, social, and economic factors here. We face a historical legacy of inequality, which impacts up to now in the access that minority groups have to quality education, resources, makes it harder for them to enter in professions such like medicine or law. Second, we were not prepared for it. That's it. DEI is a topic of discussion in the U.S. since the 60s with the Civil Rights Act, affirmative actions. The first academic article ever written about DEI in a business environment was published in 73 in the Academy of Management Journal. It related to racial challenges. It's an interesting article. However, in Brazil, our first article was published almost three decades after that, in 2000. And the craziest thing about it is that the article was reporting a study made by a multinational company, an American company, that had an office here in Brazil and was trying to implement its DEI policies here in the country. So despite being demographically or culturally mixed country, diversity management only started to be seen as important through the subsidiaries of American and European multinationals due to the pressure that the headquarters were putting here in the offices in Brazil. And what I discovered during my research is that this continues to be the driving force behind the DEI practices in Brazilian law firms. The pressure made by clients, and in some cases made by other law firms in search of market legitimacy, for example, is still the driving force that makes law firms here in Brazil push forward DEI practices or policies.
There's certainly an argument to be made that that's true anywhere and in the US as well. And we're going to circle back to that point. I'm interested in hearing a little bit about how the firm is addressing this issue, your firm in particular, or other Brazilian firms, given this DEI gap that exists from a racial cultural background in your region.
So I believe we have here some different practices going on that our firm and other firms are working on it right now, involving the entire community. And for example, we need to, of course, training our people inside of the office is important, training them on unconscious bias and training them on the importance of having a diverse team, how to include diverse members, etc. This is important. But to face this challenge that I mentioned, we need to do something from out of the law firm. So we need to get involved with law schools. We need to support, for example, non-white students or poor students that comes from poor communities to have access to a good education. Here in our firm, we invest in child education of poor communities nearby. We have young apprentices here that come to the office to learn a little bit more about the business of law, about how a law firm of that size really work. I understand that it is difficult for them even to finish high school. It's difficult for them to reach a law school, college. And even for those who manage to do that and to study in a public law school, here we have public schools, public law schools, they don't have access to English courses or different abilities, using different software computers for business purpose, this kind of stuff. So we need to help them with that. So investing in education since childhood is the best option we have here as law firms and other organizations as well, to change these social inequalities and these problems related to diversity. And the only problem with that is that it takes a lot of time for you to see any results. I believe we've been working with an NGO that focuses on the education of child between 6 and 15 years old for 5 years. And still a lot of fears to see the results of this investment in this community, on those kids or teenagers, to have them really obtaining a change in their realities. So not only our firm, but all other firms that are working like that, and I know a lot of different social projects that are going on related to education, they will take a lot of time to show real results. And there is no other way, because I can have very, very inclusive law firm environment culture. I can have different policies and practices involving the hiring of minorities here in my firm. But if I don't have those young people prepared to arrive in a law school, to finish law school and to come to the firm, doesn't matter how many policies or practices you have inside of your firm, this is never going to happen. You will never have non-white professionals representation in your firm. And like, this is the same route we did with female professionals, but the entire society community did that for women decades ago. And now we are seeing female partners reaching leadership in law firms all over the world. Only now. But I don't know, here in Brazil, if I remember it well, the first female attorney was 100 years ago. It takes a lot of time. It is a difficult path. And I understand that sometimes it seems like, this is not worth it. Why am I doing this? But it is worth it. You need to trust the process. You know?
Well, it sounds like you've got a two-pronged approach here. One is obviously in the near term, investing in the mindset of the lawyers who are currently at the firm, training them on unconscious bias, helping them understand the importance of diversity, and just setting the stage, but also recognizing that the second prong is this long-term investment in the talent pipeline, which may take a generation or two to really fulfill on its promise. So that's definitely taking the long view here.
Yeah, that's a very long view. Of course, we can work on different issues that will not take so long. And we do that. Like I said, receiving young apprentices here from poor communities as well. They are already inside a law school or inside another school that relates to our practice, like marketing or administration or whatever. And having them here and trying to prepare them for high standard level of professional business organization. We can do that and we do that, but this is not what I believe will really change the entire society not to face those challenges anymore.
So Vivian, you told me a story earlier as we circle back to what's driving the change. It's clients that are driving the change, right? Law firms didn't suddenly wake up and develop a social justice conscience that wasn't there before. We're going to talk about whether that's right or wrong, but ultimately it's the clients that are driving this movement. Can you talk to us a little bit about one of the most significant experiences you had with Uber inspiring that change?
Yeah, I love this story because this really exemplifies the situation of client-driven changes. This happened 4 or 5 years ago. This big company, Uber, sent a letter to all Brazilian law firms which represented them in different matters in the country. One of the firms was our firm. And they explained it at this letter that there was going to happen a meeting in the following month to present their new service provider engagement rules, which would impact all contracts they had with law firms in the country. And so they expected a representative of each firm to be there at this meeting. I was there with the partner responsible for the client, and the meeting was led by the Latin America General Counsel at that time. And it was an extensive meeting. It took like 3 hours with at least 100 high-profile attendees from the biggest law firms of the country, partners, managing partners, leading partners, sitting there. And during those 3 hours, there was a massive presentation on diversity and inclusion initiatives with amazing, compelling stories of some of their employees, which included refugees, transgenders, elderly, people of different races, with different disabilities. Each of them shared their personal stories. Each of them shared their experiences inside Uber, how the company helped them in reaching professional goals, in advancing challenges they were facing, and that they never dreamed of working in such an inclusive environment like that. I remember that during those stories, a lot of times I was looking at the partners of other firms, and some of them were really emotionally touched, like crying, or they were really connected with the stories being told there for personal and different reasons. And after those 3 hours, the general counsel herself went to the stage and presented the new guidelines for service providers contracts, which of course included different rules on their expectations of diversity and inclusion programs and the numbers, the statistics that the law firms would need to send to Uber from that time on. Otherwise, they would not continue with the contracts. I remember that this was really new for Brazilian law firms and for managing partners. When we were out of the meeting room and we were chatting with each other, people were shocked, really shocked, because of course, human resources professionals or marketing professionals, we were already talking about DEI, trying to engage firms in DEI initiatives, but this was a very far away topic for managing partners. And being seated there for 3 hours, listening over and over again, the importance and how this changes lives and how it helped the company to achieve better results, better goals, be more profitable, etc. This was a new reality for them. And I remember it was a new reality for me too. It was just after this meeting that I decided to change my entire research for my master's degree and to focus my research on this. It was a really good example of how a client can change the entire environment of a market, or at least drive the change.
So we've talked about gender diversity. We've talked about racial diversity. We haven't talked about persons with disabilities or the LGBTQ plus community. Is that also, are you seeing the same patterns and trends emerge? Or, you know, that has less to do with some of the factors that you mentioned in terms of economically disadvantaged, or there just not being that much racial diversity in Brazil. Have you started to see some leading indicators that at least there's progress in those arenas?
Yes, especially LGBTQ A+. We have here in Brazil, the community is really big and active. Major law firms, I believe that almost all bigger law firms here, they have committees and programs focused on this community. And I believe that legal market here is pretty much inclusive for in this way, for this specific minority. It's strange because law, people usually think about law, legal market law, as conservative place. And indeed it is, but it is conservative in some ways and not others. It is conservative, but they are already, at least here, and I believe in the Western society in total, they are open to some minorities if they have to engage in a position that they need to invest a lot of time, effort, and money to change something. It is going to be more difficult. So to change social or racial inequalities, you need to do all of this. It is difficult. To be inclusive for LGBT minorities, this requests a change in your culture, but it is not as challenging as changing your community as a whole. I believe we are more advanced in promoting DEI in the legal market and in business as general for those minorities, females, LGBTQIA+, than for non-white professionals or poor communities. I believe that the only part, of course, we have specific communities like the transgenders. And transgenders, they really face real life challenges here, not only here, I think at the entire world, to work on law firms, because I don't believe attorneys are the problem. I think the entire human society is not prepared for them to accept those differences. But this is not a problem related specifically to legal society, to law firms, to attorneys. This is a problem related to the entire society, to the entire world. So this is a bigger issue to be addressed.
Yes, I think generally speaking, society will need a lot of time to be able to adjust and release prejudices that currently impede the trans community from being accepted as a part of, you know, normal life, right? Because it's a new idea for many.
it's a new idea for a lot of people. We need new generations to advance to leadership positions so they can really work on changing this environment, because they will have another background. They have access since young to different communities and materials and studies. It is very difficult to change an entire generation.
And you touched on this earlier. I mean, the first female attorney, you said in Brazil, was it 100 years ago?
Yeah.
And so it took us many generations to accept the idea of women as leaders and to look up to them and to, you know, see them as role models in a business context. And, you know, hopefully it won't take 100 years before we get there with the trans community. But we are slow to change as a species. So I want to circle back to something else here that we touched on earlier. We've talked a lot about the client-driven change here when it comes to DEI. And if clients hadn't insisted upon it, law firms probably wouldn't be putting much, if any, energy into DEI initiatives. So it really begs the question, is this a failing from law firms' perspective? I mean, lawyers are no stranger to social justice, and yet their organizations, their institutions, have not really invested a lot of time or effort to be advocates in that regard, unless a client is paying the money for it. What is your position on this?
This is problematic. According to some researchers, we can foster DEI in business organizations in general through two lenses. The business case that relates to competitive advantage,
right,
that the companies can have with diverse teams, or social justice, which sees the organization as an active character of the cultural social changes that needs to be implemented in society to make it better for the entire community. The business case was very much used in early 2000 in US and Europe, because it's a really strong argument to persuade business executives to engage on the fight for inclusion. However, I see an increasing movement in demonizing the business case argument, which I believe is making leaders feel resentful of this movement. One thing that I like to say is that it is really difficult for anybody to know what to do or where to go when you don't know why you are moving. So we need to understand that companies and law firms, they are made to profit. This is the main objective of having a law firm, to have your clients, to win, to earn money, to be profitable. Executive leaders, managing partners, they know very well this language. They understand that. They are fully capable of understanding that they need to improve in a number of practices, including DEI, to reach better results, to be more profitable. When we start demonizing the fact, the argument that investing in DEI policies, practices is a way to be more profitable, to have advantage competitive in your business, in your market, and we start to say that you can only do that because you want to be a good part of your community, this is going to make a lot of executive managing partners feeling lost. They will have difficulties in understanding why they need to put their time, efforts, and money on this if they have a lot of different practices and policies that they also need to invest at that is going to be profitable for the firms. So for me, we need to go back a little bit, a couple of years ago, and reclaim the business case arguments, because I do believe they are strong. They have a lot of research and numbers and facts that helps as a basis, and they will make leadership feel more comfortable when propelled to invest in DEI.
So it sounds like you're saying that law firms are fundamentally for-profit organizations. They're not nonprofit organizations with community missions, and that ultimately they are developed and designed. Their function is to serve client needs and make money and distribute those money across the equity partners and to the rest of the people who work at the firm. So there was never a mandate that says, and you should also give a lot of money to the community, and you should also be have a diverse workforce, and you should also be inclusive. Now, one might argue, well, these are just part now of being a good citizen in the world, but it's not a business mandate. And to the extent that clients are pushing this agenda onto firms, it actually increases the likelihood that firms will pay attention to, will invest energy in, will invest money in DEI initiatives, and it will hold them accountable to a consistent focus in this arena, simply because it ties directly to one of their core functions, which is making the clients happy. So that ultimately the business case wins out over any altruistic argument for why, you know, lawyers and law firms should be doing this regardless.
Yes. When I said that all of this, those changes, it takes a lot of time to really make an impact in society as a whole. It also means that this argument, the social justice argument that we need as a society to improve ourselves, to improve our organizations, our business, our firms, in a way that includes all the differences that we may have and face in our society. This is good, but this is going to take a lot of time to really be adopted by people. We need some years, we need generations to work on this. We don't change culture in a couple of years. This never happened in the history of mankind, and it's not going to happen now. We need to understand that we need to use the arguments and the realities we have now to start implementing changes for the future. So if the main argument, the better argument we have now is that our clients are requesting this, that we need to be compliant with the rules and the guidelines they are pushing forward. This will help us being more profitable because diverse teams have different point of views and they can work and solve problems in a faster, quicker way. We don't need to demonize that. I really don't like the idea. And I see this in a lot of magazines, articles, podcasts, that in fact, this was the article that won McKinsey Award last year at Harvard Business Review. The title of the article was "Stop with the Business Case in Diversity and Inclusion." And I really don't agree with that, because we don't need to stop with the business case. We need to advance diversity and inclusion. And if we need the business case to advance diversity and inclusion, great, let's do it. Until we reach a point in society as a whole that we don't need to push diversity and inclusion anymore. There will be social justice, because we will be in another moment of our society that this is not going to be a challenge anymore. This is not going to be a problem anymore. So I am an advocate of the business case for legal market and different business marketers as well.
Well, I certainly agree with you that how we get there is less important than that we get there. So I really appreciate you sharing your perspective with us, Vivian. And it's fascinating to me that you have invested so much of your own career and expertise in learning about and developing a more sophisticated position on this topic, and I'm sure your firm is better off for it, especially given the international scope and all of the very, I'm sure, nuanced and complicated DEI challenges that you navigate across the globe. So thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today. It's been a fascinating conversation, and I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you very much, David. I really enjoyed being here talking about that this topic that for me is very special, and it's fascinating as well. And I hope everybody that is listening there, that they enjoy. And if they want to talk more about it, just look for me at LinkedIn. I'm here.
Very good.
Thank you.
Today's episode was brought to you by Pipeline Plus. We solve business development problems for professionals around the world. Visit pipelineplus.com to learn more about our technology and coaching solutions.